Hello, I'm Tara Singh, and today we are discussing international business environment. So when you think of international business, if you just look around yourself and try to spot aspects of international business in your everyday life, can you spot any? I think if you think of the Coke that you're drinking, the McDonald's that you're eating, the smartphone in your hand, maybe even the clothing that you're wearing, most of them would have some element of international business associated with them. Now, why is that? What is international business? International, as the name suggests, is something which is cross-border. So out of all the countries in the world, obviously every country is not acting in its individual silo like an island. Countries are dealing with each other. There are products going out of a country, crossing the international borders, and there are products coming into the country, products and services. And this is what is making the global economy work, and this is what is taking care of consumers' requirements across the globe. So international business, to put it in very lay terms, is something that we can't live without. And it is the cross-border movement and sale of goods and services in a very, very simple and basic terminology. So while we will get into some of the technical aspects, at the most basic, think of it as this. Now, when I'm talking about a smartphone, you may have very well purchased a smartphone of an Indian company based in India. So you may think, okay, but why does it have anything to do with business environment? It's an Indian company based in India. I've bought its product in India with INR. But you don't know if some of the parts going into this smartphone are actually being imported. You don't know if it was assembled elsewhere and then brought here. You don't know if the technology that it's using is actually being supplied by someone outside the country. So it is not just the final product or service. It could be various elements of it at the different stages of production and sale, which could involve international business. So we'll be getting into lots of aspects of it, both technical, economic, financial, social, environmental. But I want to touch on something very recent. I don't know how many of you caught the news in this month, and our Prime Minister visited Singapore and visited Brunei, some of our major trading partners within this month. And a lot of interesting developments happened, and memorandums of understanding or MOUs were signed. And this is to mutually benefit both countries and, you know, the economies. So for example, in Singapore, during that visit, Capital Land of Singapore, as part of this agreement and arrangement, committed to invest about 14.8 billion Singapore dollars in India over the next 4 years. They have already entered India about 30 years ago via an IT park in the southern part of the country. So it is not just economic and something where business CEOs are involved. It is something which is of paramount importance and a priority for the government also. And which is why our premier, our prime minister himself, is someone who takes the initiatives when he visits these other countries. Now, here I'm talking about an investment. On the other side, during the Brunei visit, it was very interesting because the two things which were prominently discussed were the digital payments of India, which are actually quite, becoming quite successful internationally. And there was an MOU for the digital payments service and technology, and also for the space station. Now, if you didn't know, there's a command station for the Indian Space Technology Program in Brunei. So you see, the importance becomes at so many different levels. And then it becomes a priority, not just for the business side of people, but also for the political side of people. So this is constantly in the news, these things. If you are attuned to those, you will realize how much it impacts us on a day-to-day basis, short-term and long-term. So having introduced this, let's get into some of the more some of the other concepts which we are going to be touching on and elaborating a lot more. What are the main objectives that we have from here? We want to know, one, what it is. As I said, very simply, it is the international cross-border sale of goods and services. Over and above that, what are the various factors? Why does a company or a country choose to get into it? There could be cost factors, there could be labor factors, there could be environmental factors. It could be simply a matter of natural resources and raw materials being available in a certain part of the world and not being available in another part of the world. So there are so many elements which actually go into the strategy of international business, the motivations behind conducting international business for companies and for countries. So one of the instances, as an example, before we get into some of the other aspects, is a case where the German footwear maker is actually moving its production of almost 3 million pairs of footwear from China to India. Now, why is that happening? It is not a split second decision. It may not be only that, you know, India has, you know, there are issues with China post-COVID, or, you know, the world is moving to a China plus strategy, which I will touch on further. But what could be the various motivating factors where there is an established production facility in China, where also labor cost is fairly low, and yet the company is choosing to move it to India? It's moving it to a facility in Uttar Pradesh, which will lead to employment locally, which will lead to revenue for India. Now, some of the reasons behind this are actually cost and cost of production and labor. So while China also has a large workforce and can provide cheap labor, so can India. And not only that, we are all familiar with the Make in India focus. So we are trying to push the production in India, efficiency in India, the quality of what is produced in India. And this is something which is a very, very high priority to the government. So as part of the Make in India, we have made the scenario very attractive that people are actually moving their facilities from other parts of the world to India, which is very, very good for India. So moving on to some of the other elements of international business. Now, in a very basic terminology that you already know, export is when goods and services go out of a country, cross the international border and go out. So a pharmaceutical, a vaccine produced in India, goes out and is sold and supplied to another country. For example, the vaccine produced in India during COVID was supplied, let's say, in UK. That is an export. And an import is when a product or service generated and produced in another country crosses the border and comes into my country. So when it is an inflow, it is import. And when it is an outflow, it is export. Now, obviously, when it is export, as a country, I generate revenue. And when it is an import, then I have to pay money. Now, while we talk about global MNCs, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Apple, we have international business MNCs within the country as well. Tata's, Birla's, Infosys, TCS. We have a lot of international business, very large international business that is being driven by our Indian companies as well, and the various reasons and motivations of why they are indulging in it at various stages of the production and sale. So keep in mind that when we're talking international business, we're not just talking MNCs, multinational corporations of other countries. We are talking about large conglomerates of our country as well. And what would these conglomerates have had to figure out? Cultures, currencies, economies, cost factors, labor environment, unions, political environment, wars, cultural factors. So many elements would go into understanding the why international business should be conducted and if it should be conducted, and not simply a matter of bottom line. It is so many other factors which come into play. For example, if you want to conduct business with Japan, you have to adhere to certain cultural aspects. You know, you cannot, if you present a business card, it has to be printed both in English and in Japanese. There is a ritual that a business meeting does not start before the exchange of business cards, which is called meishi. So if you do not adhere to these, you may not get a very positive reception in those countries. So there are so many elements which go into conducting international business, which have to be understood before anyone can jump into it purely from a commercial standpoint. So when we are crossing these national boundaries, there are various aspects, both for products and services. It could be human resource, it could be knowledge, it could be raw materials. Now keep in mind that for India also, historically post-independence, there has been such a change in what we were exporting to begin with, what we were importing, and where we stand today. So for example, historically, we had been an agricultural economy. Now we have a leaning towards services. So we are one of the larger service exporters in the world. Also, let me not even talk about as far back as independence. Even if we look at just what happened during COVID. Even during COVID, the dynamic of the world changed. Suddenly, services exports and services trade globally went down because people were restricted to their countries, to their homes, and actually demand for products moved up. Commodities and merchandise moved up versus only service, versus primarily service demand. So you see these dynamics, all these dynamics impact, and what a country is exporting and importing is not constant or static. It keeps evolving. We have in the past been exporters of non-petroleum products, gems, textiles. We are trying to push certain kinds of value-added products like jackfruit, bananas, pharmaceuticals we export very heavily. We want to start exporting engineering goods even more aggressively than we are doing already as a digital country, digitally empowered country. We are exporting a lot when it comes to e-commerce. So the country and the government is very keen to keep pushing the non-traditional exports also over and above our traditional exports, which have in the past brought in a lot of revenue, as I said, like glassware, like gems, like non-petroleum products, etc. There is a push to increase the proportion of non-traditional products and services as well. Now, when we're talking about elements like country risk, we could not have imagined that wars would break out in Russia, Ukraine, or what is happening in the Middle East now. Now, one may think, okay, that's happening in Russia, Ukraine, how does that impact me? Now, when Russia invaded Ukraine, a larger part of the world, especially the developed world, put sanctions on products and services from Russia. A lot of companies exited in a hurry. Heineken sold off its business, so many other companies, just they left revenue on the table and exited Russia en masse. Whereas when it came to India, we actually found it beneficial to deal with them during this time, and we increased our purchase of crude and petroleum from Russia and got it at a more attractive price because other countries were not buying from there. Now, internationally, how that affects our reputation is also an aspect that, you know, we are doing business with Russia when they are indulging in, you know, when they initiated this war, which has been so destructive. But that is something that the country is weighing against the commercial aspects. So, interestingly, Russia as an import partner for us, a country that we are importing from, has the rank has gone up phenomenally post the war situation. So there are so many things which come in, which could be both boons and banes, risks, or something which could be rewarding. So it is not simply just a commercial aspect. There are so many other aspects when it comes to international trade. Now, why is it important? Think of 1991 and when liberalization happened in India. Pre-1991, the products and services that we had available in India were a certain limited, you know, amount. Post that, what is become available to us, right from telecom to transport to insurance to any other product, it's completely changed. So, not only has it become something which is an absolute boon to consumers, but even for the economy, look at the way our economy has grown as a result of it. So it is something which brings about growth. It is something which brings about upliftment. It is something which has brought a lot of countries, even in the Asian region, a lot of countries out of actually poverty because of international trade and growth. So there is a lot which is beneficial when it comes to international business, both from an economy point of view and from an individual consumer point of view. Now think about how we benefited. Post-liberalization, if you want to go and purchase a car, you know, so many global brands available to you. Yes, you have to pay your price. Yes, you have to pay your, you know, duties, etc. But look at the phones that you can buy. Look at the, television and various other OTTs, which is recent, that you can watch. So look at the way telecom grew in the country. Late 90s onwards. So there is so much positivity which comes. Look at the clothing brands which entered. Look at the FMCG brands which entered. So it has so much benefit from a individual citizen point of view and from an economy point of view. Think of the kind of employment it has created, the whole quality of life, the middle class trap that we have, the quality of life and the standard of living when it comes to middle class changed so much. Was uplifted so much because of all the benefits. Now, what happened in the 1991 liberalization? Of course, we had a very, very restricted license, Raj, before that. We had a very restricted license, Raj, and a lot of restrictions on imports and exports of goods and services. Post-1991, a lot of the restrictions on imports and exports were removed. The sensitive lists were removed. The licensing system was changed. FEMA Act replaced the Draconian FERA Act. Also, our currency was made partially convertible. So, we became a lot easier to deal with and a lot more accessible for the rest of the world. Now, India is now the most populous country. So everyone wants to deal with us. Where will you get a ready market which is so large? So the access post 1991 liberalization completely blew up the consumption patterns, the demand patterns, the growth patterns in the country. Now, coming to specific numbers, the global exports were estimated to be, 7.1 trillion in 2022. Now, keep in mind that trade, obviously, as with everything else, suffered during pandemic, but mostly now the pre-pandemic levels have been re-achieved. When it comes to India, we had an export of almost $777 billion and imports of about $658 billion. Now, the government, as I was mentioning, is constantly looking to expand, not just the products and services that we export, but also the markets that we reach out to. As I was telling you, we took advantage of this situation in Russia and managed to get a better deal for ourselves when it comes to oil imports. Likewise, the government has identified for non-iron ore exports, the government has identified markets like Kenya, Saudi Arabia, where we can export to. Likewise, for pharmaceutical, markets like Lithuania, Switzerland, etc., have been identified to export to. So when we're talking pure numbers, keep in mind that we are constantly looking for newer regions, both for imports and for exports, newer markets, because while, of course, we are giving access to India's population to the world, we also want access to the global population so that our exports grow and our revenues are increased. As I was mentioning, we saw a downside, especially in services during the pandemic region, and not just India, the global services, because demand during the pandemic region, during the pandemic time, shifted towards merchandise and commodities more than services. But post-pandemic, now the pandemic is over, we seem to be seeing trajectories where rates are moving back towards pre-pandemic levels. This gives you an idea of how the world service exports moved during the various years. You will see between 2019 and 2020, there is a negative growth, and that is clearly, as I was saying, because of the pandemic, and which was very, very natural. Now, that has also raised new motivations for countries in the world that should, God forbid, should something like that happen again, then we need to be prepared to address those demand requirements of our countrymen domestically. Inventory management, production facilities, a lot of things have been impacted where realization has come on that should there be an internationally challenging situation like the COVID, then we should reduce our dependencies on international elements and be able to respond to those domestically as well. So these are things which have impacted our, the global trade in the recent years. Now we are seeing situations like the Red Sea, where the Houthi rebels, supported by Yemen, are attacking the ships and creating havoc and piracy is happening. And that has impacted freight rates, that has impacted the trade scenario, that has impacted insurance. So one would not have imagined that something like this in the modern world, with all the militaries of the world and the security services of the world, that something like this could be a challenge. But even developed countries like the US and UK are acknowledging that they have not been able to tackle the Houthi rebel situation. So the Red Sea, which is a major channel for trade, is impacted heavily, and all of these things come into play and impact global trade. Now, this gives you some of the global division in terms of some of the industries which have a higher contribution versus some of the industries which have a lower contribution. Now, if you see travel and transport are heavily some of the largest contributing industries when it comes to world service exports. And even the resurgence in service exports, which has gone back post-pandemic and is going to pre-pandemic levels, is driven in large part by transport, travel, etc., and telecommunications also. I have mentioned to you the trends that we have seen, which have impacted the world, not just domestic, not just our domestic trade, but the whole world. We have seen changes in travel and transport driving the resurgence back in a way that it was, you know, not during the pandemic years, because obviously those were completely impacted. But we seem to be seeing positive trends there too. This gives an idea of the breakup between some of the developed economies and the developing economies when it comes to share of service exports. Now, again, how global dynamics impact international trade. When I was talking about Russia, now Russia has a population of about 145 million. And countries, companies like British Petroleum, Heineken, etc., left in a hurry. Now, obviously, they have been impacted both by exodus of companies and also their exports suffering. So clearly, if you know, this was a country demarcation, then their share would have fallen quite heavily in the world global exports. Now, they have partners, like trading partners like India, who took the benefit of this. But globally, of course, because of sanctions, etc., which we'll be getting into in a lot more detail, they have been impacted. Now, these, very interestingly, are some of the top five service exporters. As you see, one of, you know, some of the countries mentioned here are the ones which are expected to be there. But then you also have countries like Ireland. Now, when it comes specifically to Ireland, and I'll be getting into that in a little more detail, they have made their tax structure quite friendly. They have some very, very positive elements in their economy, which I'll touch on, which have helped them to become very, very attractive markets when it comes to exports. And clearly, you are seeing that in their participation in global exports of services. Now, when it comes to developing economies, clearly China, India are in the top few. Now, when it comes to China, a very interesting dynamic which has happened between India and China in the recent past is that India's largest trading partner means exports, imports combined, India's largest trading partner for the longest time was the US. And only recently, China has marginally overtaken that. So actually, China has ended up becoming India's number one trading partner. And while, of course, we don't want Chinese products being dumped, we want to push Make in India, we have a lot of other elements. At the same time, when it comes to positive trade, of course, we want positive trade to grow. Our delegations keep interacting with international delegations from China to allow China to give us more access to their demography, to give more access to our people for business visas, etc. So it's a very interesting dynamic between India and China, which is playing out. Now, within the developing economies, the tiger economies and the tiger cub economies, which I'll be getting into, are ones which have shown phenomenal growth over just few decades. And we will see how international trade played a part in completely transforming these countries and their economies.